Yo, 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 what's going on? It's your boy, Kim. Are you interested in becoming a sponsor for the Flying Intellectual Podcast? Would you like us to advertise your business on this platform? If interested, email us at info@flyyoungintellectual.com. That's info@flyyoungintellectual.com. We're waiting to hear from you. Peace. What's going on, people? It's your boy, Kem, and welcome back to the Fly Young Intellectual Podcast. Happy New Year to everyone. Hope everyone is having a great time. The Fly Young Intellectual Podcast is about informing, inspiring, and interacting, as we all know. And today's guest is no stranger to those three pillars. Her literal brand is all about informing, inspiring, and interacting with people. Our guest, she is a woman of many, many talents and many gifts, many hats that she wears that ranges from, I'll go from the most recent going backwards. She's the host of one of the hottest shows right now on Tempo called Hot Ones Caribbean, where she is asking the hot, hot questions to the hot, hot guests. She is also has her own platform on social media where she provides people with information on Virgin Islands culture, how to preserve it, talking about the hard questions, the hard topics that people are not delving into. That's how I got to know her personally, and that really piqued my interest. Then I actually got to meet her in person. She's as sweet of a person as she is online, I promise you that. She's also a co-producer and a co-host of the Caribbean Mystics podcast, a podcast where she delves into supernatural stories that happen in the Caribbean from a first-hand basis. Real things. This is not a joke. Goat woman does exist. she's a Virgin Islander through and through. She prides herself in being able to be a culture bearer, and I'm happy to have her here so that we can have a conversation about all things Gabby Carrard. So everybody, welcome Gabrielle Carrard to the Flying Intellectual Podcast. What's up, Gabs?
Hey, I'm so excited to be here and to be on this platform and to be talking to you and to your listeners. So I'm ready for a really fun episode.
No, for sure. We've been trying to get this together. As I said, we worked together on the Hot Ones production. You knocked that out of the park. How was that Thank experience? You. Yeah, absolutely. How was that experience for you?
I learned so much. I feel like we don't really understand how much goes into production until you're in a production. I learned a lot. I have a lot more appreciation for the people that do all of the behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. And it was hot, though. The hot sauce was hot, you know, like it was rough. My belly was walking up a few times. Yep. But it was fun because I also got to meet Virgin Islanders that have really like trailblazed, right? The scene in their respected, you know, like field. And it's nice to finally get to like shake those hands and talk to them and have that face-to-face connection. Cause for a long time I looked up to some of them, you know? And so to be able to be around them and to be able to be in that energy was incredible.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You did really well. I don't know how y'all did them hot sauces. I tried a couple of them myself. Just like on separate days, not like, you know, 10 in a row, you know. It takes a lot of fortitude there, for sure.
For sure. I'm hoping that in the next few seasons, they'll try and break up some of the interviews. Because I don't think a lot of people realize, like, Julius and I were, like, doing 2 to 3 interviews a day.
A day.
And so it was intense because it's just, like, it's back-to-back. And by the time you're done, it's like you've had so much hot sauce that you're bloated, so you don't eat anything else for the day. And so all you're literally fueled by is hot sauce and wings.
Yeah, there's not enough Maalox in the world that can help you out. No. Not enough at all, man. But I'm glad you made it through. Man. And the product is looking good, and I'm looking forward to seeing more of the episodes as they come out and roll out. I think as I got introduced to you was, you know, your content taking up my explore page, essentially. Me being a Virgin Islander as well, you know, you're being from St. Thomas, me being from St. Croix, whatever, it doesn't matter. You know, we're all one, and I think that's like where our generation is, making sure that we kind of bridge the gap, that separation thing. It doesn't behoove or be whole. You know, it doesn't do anything for anyone at that point.
Yeah.
We're better together. So talk to us a little bit about kind of growing up in St. Thomas, kind of like what that kind of entailed for you. What do you remember that was like part of your core upbringing?
Well, I have been very privileged in that I feel like a lot of Virgin Islanders like had a hand in who I am today, right? And we live in a community in which oftentimes some of our coaches are working for free or next to free. Or some of our program like organizations, you know, are working for free just to give back. And so I've had a lot poured into me. Growing up in the Virgin Islands, you know, people say that the village is dead, but I think the village is definitely still alive.
Definitely alive.
And yeah, it's definitely still alive. It's starting to look different, but I definitely don't think it's dead. And so I spent a lot of time with people that were older than me. And I'm talking about like elders. And so, you know, you're around the elders, they're sharing stories, they're teaching you stuff, you know, like, and so there was always like an oral tradition foundation in my life, whether I was at school, whether I was in the Boy Scouts, and I didn't want to be in a Girl Scouts, no shade to the Girl Scouts, but I wanted a little bit more vigor and, you know, rough and tough. Mm-hmm. And so I spent a lot of time in like this program called the Venture Scouts, which is a hybrid of the Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts.
Okay.
And I was a part of a troop called Troop 156. It was a part of the All Saints Cathedral School chapter. And I was the first scout to get the highest award in the Venture program for that chapter. It's the equivalent of the Eagle Scout Award. So it's something that I'm very proud of.
Nice.
But I learned a lot there. Like, there was a lot of discipline. There was a lot of, like, skill set. So, like, fire building, tent building, cooperation. So, like, the hard and soft skills of life. But I would say that the most important thing that I learned in the Boy Scouts, and it's the thing that I continue to, like, lead life with, is you leave a place better than you found it. Right. So it's the first rule in like taking care of the environment. It's environmental ethics. Right. And so I've taken that and I've tried to implore that into the other facets of my life. So you leave people better than you found it. You leave a place, you leave a situation, you know, like better than you found it. And so as I got older, I started to see that the Virgin Islands pride, quote unquote, that we think we have is actually very superficial. Because when you ask Virgin Islanders, oftentimes, what's one thing you'd want people who are not from here to know about the Virgin Islands? You get these really flaccid responses, right? Like, mm-hmm. you get things like, well, I want them to know we drive on the left, and yeah. I want them to know that you don't need a passport. And all of that, mm-hmm. yeah, mm-hmm. all of that yeah. is cute.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
it's so anemic. Of yeah, an
it's
answer.
It's not rooted, not rooted in anything. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it was very evident to me, and it had been for a while, that we were further separating ourselves from Virgin Islands pride. And so I wanted to, again, do my part as somebody who had reaped the benefits of people pouring into me and the oral tradition and the elders taking the time with me and teaching me and this and the other. I wanted to find a way that I could do that for my community without feeling like it was extractive. Mm-hmm. I think I love our community very much, but I think sometimes we extract too much from the people who are gung-ho and are determined. And I wanted to do what I felt I could do in my own capacity, on my own terms, not feeling like I had to deal with certain topics or not deal with certain topics because of who or what, you know, people would think. Or I wanted to just have it on my terms. And so because I had a wealth of information as it related to history and I love learning, I decided that I was going to start doing a TikTok because I was seeing no Virgin Islands voices covering history on my TikTok. And further than that, I didn't see nobody that looked like me. So there, because we have a lot of people, especially in the Western world, that are not very well traveled, mm-hmm. People build these conceptions of what they think people should look like if they're from a certain place. And I oftentimes see like South Africans talk about it a lot because it's such a mixed bag of people. And them feeling like people, especially from America, glossing over their lived experiences over other people who lived in other areas. And so I wasn't seeing a body that looked like me from the Caribbean. I'm an ancestral Virgin Islander. I wasn't seeing a body that sounded like me. And so I knew that it was a really great opportunity for me to kind of put my foot in the door. And to be honest, I did not know where it would go. I didn't expect it to go anywhere big, to be perfectly honest. I just thought I was going to build a cute little community. And I wanted to cover the things that I personally was interested in because it's my platform, you know?
Right.
So I dabbled a lot in history. I dabbled a lot in spirituality and folklore and like myths and superstition and all the things. And I found that there was a group of people that just liked the things that I like. And I like conspiracy too. So there was just a group of people that liked what I did and liked my accent on TikTok. And I was able to get about, I'm almost to 30,000 followers on TikTok. And then there was a piece of me that felt like this was nice, but I was not hitting my Virgin Islands community. So like it was a cute little, you know, endeavor. And I needed to bring it to the Virgin Islands community, which would be more so Instagram and Facebook. And I was afraid because I know that our community could, you know, really roast people. And and I have a friend. She's probably one of the most profound people I've ever met in my life. Her name is Jatam Serge. She actually owns the store that I manage. And one day I was telling her about this call to be on Instagram and to do the work on Instagram and to use that as my platform to like give back and being afraid. And she basically was like, if you're not going to step in all the way, don't step in at all. You know, like if you're going to allow intention to be what guides you, if your intention is to be supportive and your intention is to bring information to the people and Virgin Islands pride and all the things, then you can't half step it. If you're not going to step in, then don't step in at all. And so after I got, you know, moral of that story is that you want to keep people around you that force you out of your comfort zone and don't allow you to sit in your victimhood and your perceived reality. And so I started doing it on Instagram and it took off and it started garnering a lot of attention in my local community. And it's been a very rewarding ride ever since.
It literally has been a stepping stone and a springboard for you in many ways. I wanted to kind of circle back because you were talking about you didn't see people who looked like you and stuff like that. Now, just for the education of our average listener, for those who don't know, you're from Frenchtown, correct?
So my mother from Frenchtown, my father from Northside.
You're Frenchy descent. So let's get into that terminology, Frenchy, the community of Frenchtown, the aesthetic of it as well, which you, I know what Frenchies look like, you know, being in, you know, I lived in St. Thomas and things like that. But let's get into like the essence of Frenchies, the history of it, and what they mean to the island of St. Thomas.
Sure. So I will say that I'll start with the history of it. Frenchies first started coming to St. Thomas. I would say there are reports of having Frenchies in the late 1600s, but I haven't found enough information and evidence to use that as my like my foundation. So I'll go with what I normally see, which is that Frenchies started coming to St. Thomas in the 1700s from St. Barts. Initially, the Frenchies went to St. Barts from France after the storming of the Bastille. Their intentions was that they wanted to have religious freedom. They were French Huguenots, and so they made a deal with France, and France was basically like, no problem, because they wanted them out of their hair. And so they were like, okay, like go, you know, and they wanted an island in the Caribbean. So they started to settle in St. Barts, and when they were there, it was very difficult for them. There was dry, everything was dry, and there was not enough rainfall for it to really like support like crop growing and all of that to any large extent. And so they suffered. And then the Swedish came and bought St. Barts from France, and the Frenchies weren't treated well, and they continued to be poor. And so finally they started to make migrations to St. Thomas, which had become a shipping port at that time. And so St. Thomas had seen, were seeing ships from Europe, they were seeing ships from the United States. Of course, you know, during that time, the slave trade is happening, so they're seeing ships from West Africa, mm-hmm. And then other Caribbean islands. And so the Frenchies decided that they were going to try to take a leap on faith, and they started to disperse throughout the Caribbean. So you'll find some Frenchies went Trinidad, some Frenchies went St. Kitts, some of them went Martinique. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of them came to St. Thomas and then Puerto Rico. And so came to St. Thomas, they began creating their own sub-community in Frenchtown. They were also very poor. So in Danish regard, their hierarchy and their society was based off of it was more class than race. And okay. So because the Frenchies them was dirt poor, they didn't have no shoes, they didn't have no nothing, they were on the lowest part of their totem pole. And so the Frenchies kept in their small communities, they didn't feel accepted, and this, that, and the other. Not to mention, if I have to be honest, I'm sure they also brought over their own bigoted ideologies.
Right.
And so I think what we saw was a convergence of bigoted ideologies. And so the Frenchies kept into their small communities. There was also a language barrier because they were speaking Patois. Mm-hmm. The Frenchtown Frenchies speak more, I guess, proper French, whereas the Northside Frenchies speak the same type of French that is speaking. It's like, it's called archaic French, and it's the Patois that they speak in Dominica. So okay. That's just to show like the interrelation,
yeah,
right,
how
of
it,
the
how
islands.
It, yeah, how it traveled, yeah.
Exactly. And so I say a lot to say that a lot of our French families are going to be intermixed, right? And so you'll have Puerto Rican in your family, you'll have Trinidadian in your family, you'll have Black, obviously. You'll have some of them have like Taino ancestry. And so there's such a mixture that when people from other places try to make me feel like, you know, you don't have a right to claim West Indian, or you don't have a right to be Virgin Islander, I don't have anything else. Like, my family been here since God McMahon. Like, I genuinely don't have, like, there's no, that this is literally like my cultural upbringing. This is literally like my life, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, I'm happy we got into this because it was actually a really interesting source of contention on my page, especially TikTok, where anybody is seeing your page and your content. And so anybody from all around the world is having their own like experience, right? Based off of their prior experiences. And I used to have people that would be like, oh, you're faking an accent. That's another thing, is that the Virgin Islands accent, because we're so small, is not a well-known accent. And so you're, whether you are white or Black and you speak in a Virgin Islands accent, you're being accused of like trying to fake a Jamaican accent, or you're being accused of some sort of like Mod Podge Trinidadian accent. And so people like to come and they like to be purposefully mean. Mm-hmm. Instead of doing purposeful research.
Right.
So I had to broaden my back with that, because in my St. Thomas community, I'm very accepted.
I don't
go places, and especially when people are like, they hear your voice or they see your face, or, you know, they ask you your last name. There is a certain social currency that comes from last names here.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's almost a feeling of like, oh, like that's one of us. That happens. And so the Frenchies eventually worked their way into the community, assimilated into the community. And so now Virgin Islanders don't always, a lot of Virgin Islanders don't view Frenchies as white. And so when you're talking about white people, they're the Frenchies, it's an unspoken acknowledgement that we ain't talking about you. Not that Virgin Islanders are ignorant to race and phenotypical, you know, presentation, right. But that when you call somebody white, there is a, it's not just describing the physical, it's describing how they come through and navigate the world. And I will also say that on the, if we're going to get into the bag of race, sometimes, right, the flip side of that is because there's a lot of Frenchies that don't want to be associated with white because what being white means in our community and how whiteness continues to extract resources from this community. Frenchies don't always acknowledge their privilege in their whiteness. Like you could leave St. Thomas and go to the States and you could present as white and you be, you know, able to move through spaces and conversations and rooms easier. And I wish that there was that understanding in my French community that like, yeah, like in the Virgin Islands, like, yeah, you know, you get to everybody's family and, you know, you're not considered white. You're not an outsider. You belong here. There's also an inherent privilege that has to be acknowledged as well as the privilege of being white in colonial times, because when the United States purchased the Virgin Islands from Denmark, well, it was the Danish West Indies from Denmark, Frenchies rose in their status, I guess, because in America, their social currency was based off of race. So Frenchies were able to move up just because of the color of their skin in their, you know, like, I get social currency in the community. And so I think it's important for Frenchies, and I never intend to diminish, right, the history of it, because I think that that's important and that's where we're able to see each other and hold each other in a space of compassion. But I also recognize that a lot of people want to look at you who are not from here and don't understand the complexities of the each island's history. And they want to label you or accuse you of nefarious things. When in fact, like a little bit of research goes a long way.
A little bit goes a long way. And that's important. And it's funny to you say that because, yeah, the dichotomy of like white versus, you know, typical islander, has always been a thing for Frenchies. For me, all my Frenchie friends are like really, as I said, like really rooted in the community or not. They don't have that, you know, that complex essentially. But I do like that you made it well-rounded by saying, hey man, like acknowledge that, yeah, there is some privilege that came, that comes with that, that actually held people down and actually gave you a little bit of a leg up. But on the flip side of that, to those who are truly like rooted in it, hey man, I can't help how I look, whatever, but I am of this community, I am, and I will do anything to enhance and embrace this community, you know, kudos to them. And as I said, like for me, when I used to live in St. Thomas or visit St. Thomas, like, you know, the Frenchies that I know are like these like adventurous, like it's so weird. It's like they're the best swimmers, the best like hikers. They know like every square inch of the island, every, you know what I'm saying? They're just these outdoors Z type of people. And it's always so beautiful to see it, kind of how they navigate and live in that island kind of mindset and well-being. And so that was always something I always like was enamored by the people of Frenchtown. So yeah, that was a great history lesson. We appreciate you. That's the Inform, Inspire, Interact, brought to you by Gabby Carrard.
Thank you. I feel like I went off on a tangent and I was like, oh,
That's why I brought you on the podcast. Yeah, we're gonna match it up every time. Or that's we're here. Okay. We're here to disrupt. We're not here to fall into line at all. Anybody can fall into line. Yes. So with that being said, your whole brand and the ethos of it is about preservation. And I think that's very important. As we navigate life, we're the younger generation and there will be younger generations after us and so on and so forth. The integral aspects of who we are, the historical preservation, that is so important because we live in a society where I think they call it now, the social media terminology is revisionist history, right? Where now, you know, every generation or every person coming, they have their own ideology of what happened. And that can entail, like, that can entail disregarding and completely alleviating and wiping out certain parts of history. Like, oh, let's just forget about that. Like, you know, let's just talk about this and whatever that looks like. And that totalitarian aspect is really being disregarded, which is kind of dangerous in a lot of ways. Not only from a historical, like, information standpoint, but also, like, you know, right now, we're realizing a lot of our historical landmarks and things like that are being, like, wiped out just for commercial gain, you know what I'm saying, whatever that looks like. So before I even go there, glad we're having this conversation, which is a great segue for me, because we're introducing two segments to the podcast. So Gabs is the first guest that's experiencing these segments. The first segment is a little abrasive, right? But I'm saying it with my chest because that's how I feel. The segment is called Read the Fucking Room. Simple. For those, Gab probably don't know, but for my community and those who follow me, back in 2020, I had a little bit of a rant, not Kanye-esque, but it was Kanye-esque in regard to Kem Enough, where, like, I hopped on, I was very triggered by all the police brutality, the police shooting, the George Floyd stuff, and we were in the house. I had nothing better to do. You know, we quarantined. We were spending a lot of time on this social media thing, a lot of time on these news articles, and something really triggered me where I felt like people were not being sensitive enough to what was going on. So I hop on my live to, like, just kind of communicate with my audience, and yeah, I just had a rant, and the recurring statement that I was having in that was, read the fucking room. And it happened to kind of go, not really viral, but semi-viral in the VI community. People took that, made GIFs out of it, memes on Twitter or whatnot. But simply, it stands for, hey man, let's be aware and sensitive to the topics and the things that are going on, and let's make sure that we're processing it, we're being emotionally sensitive, and we're doing the research and the necessary to make sure that we're adding and enhancing and really just delving into it to be better. So, with that being said, Gab, I want to segue, because your whole thing is about preservation of history, of culture, the things that are that make us, essentially, what gives us value, the things that we've built our legacies on, our families built our legacies on. And for some reason, some odd reason, you know, the people, not the people as in the people, but those who kind of govern and kind of hold some of these quote-unquote keys to the place, find that eradicating these things, whether it's landmarks and certain historical aspects, to go and put certain commercial things that they feel like will add financial value, they feel like that's a thing. I want us to really delve into why you think that's idiotic, first of all, and secondly, why we should be preserving the things that make us us. The floor is yours.
So I definitely understand the drive toward development, right? Because development allows for us to refine and to expand our infrastructure. And the reality of our situation is that we are a tourist destination. And so oftentimes when we're thinking about infrastructure, we're thinking about, is this tourist appropriate, right? I have my own personal qualms about us being predominantly funded by tourism, but that is a whole lot of story.
That's a whole lot of pod, because I also could go there with you.
Correct. But to your point is, I feel like, first and foremost, right, there are a few layers here, right? Because there are these personal responsibilities that I think all of us have to upkeep, especially people that are traveling here or moving here, right? You have a personal responsibility to do research on the place you're moving to, not just about what currency and what language we just speak and this, that, and that, but about the history.
Drive on alone, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. About the history of the space through the eyes of Virgin Islanders. about the existing nuances and complexities that ride through our community, and to be interested in it and to be sensitive about it. And so one of the things that I'm very impassioned about is I get very frustrated when I see people not from here come down here and look at a sugar mill and think to themselves, I'm going to ignore the pristine beaches, and I'm going to ignore the rolling hillsides, and I'm going to ignore the church houses that literally, you know, lace every block, and I'm going to get married in one of these hair sugar mills. I have a problem with it for a lot of different reasons. First of all, local people don't do that because we know our history and we're very sensitive to the symbolism of a sugar mill. Not only is it a symbol of the brutality that has taken place on these lands and the bloodshed, but it is also a symbolism of our resistance and the way in which, and outside of the resistance story, right? When you think about the agricultural, like, not agriculture, the architectural understanding, right? To take stone and water and mortar and molasses and to put together a structure that has survived countless hurricanes, countless earthquakes, in some cases tsunamis, that is an architectural feat and a skill set and a gift, right? That our people who were enslaved on these lands, right, were able to do. And so besides that, or further than that, right, these sites are also mass graves. And so the fact that somebody would come to a mass grave and think to themselves, this hair is where I want to have my devotion and love to my sick, that to me is like widely insensitive, widely disconnected to the local people. Exactly. And it gives the energy of, I don't give a fuck, right? That's the energy that it gives, because all of our sugar mills, for the most part, have plaques and the information is there. It's readily accessible. Mm-hmm. And the story of the sugar mill, right? Like, it's such a Caribbean, like, base story because it's such a shared experience that you have to be doing some real serious gymnastics to not know, right? And to know and to continue forward, again, breeds the energy of I don't care. And part of their responses to us when we complain about it is, well, your government should disallow it. And while I agree with that, I also think it's quite disingenuous to come to a place and see a group of people and know deep down inside that something is out of integrity, but do it anyway because it's not against the law. First and foremost.
Right. Second of all, that shows a major character flaw.
Correct. Yeah. Second of all, if you are aware, for instance, if you are from the States, which many of our tourists are, if you are from the States, then you should be quite aware and intimately in connection to the fact that you as a people could want your government to do something very, very bad. And at the end of the day, your government can do what's right for your government. Mm-hmm. And so if we know that, right, if we know that we literally just had the government or the Supreme Court allow for abortion bans, right, regardless of your medical experience, regardless if it's incest, regardless if you were raped, we know that the government went ahead anyways, right, and allowed that to happen. And so as people who are a part of a nation that are constantly fighting to uphold your rights, right, it's wild to me that you would go to another place and listen to local voices, be like, hey, like, this is crazy. And your feedback is, well, your government should make it against the law. Mm-hmm. So again, it's the energy of, I don't care. Like, I hear your story and it's cute, but I don't care. So that is an instance to me where if we're going to travel, right, we need to be each other's keeper. And so we need to walk in a space of integrity or don't come. And that's always my thing is, if you're not traveling in integrity, we don't want you. Don't come. Mm-hmm. And I know that that may not be the proper.
Inviting, yeah. Friendly.
Correct. Sure. Correct. No, I know that sounds divisive.
No.
But I just think that we have to have standard. Like, we don't want every tourist. You don't want every tourist, okay?
No, you don't want all money is not good money.
Correct. You want people that are going to be, and this is why I'm always so supportive of the traveler versus the tourist. We want the people that are interested in learning. We want the people that are interested in understanding the plight of the local people. Because when you sit down, and this is another thing, people from the States, because we are connected to America, like to be like, have a sense of entitlement over coming down here, right? Mm-hmm. And getting to do what they want because this is an American territory. And by all accounts, America, coining us America's paradise, has led us down this road and us upholding it. I hear it and I understand.
It's funny. But, of course, I work in branding and marketing, and I never, ever, before you just said that, put those two things together in why a lot of that entitlement exists. Thank you for that. That was a crazy, like, eureka moment. Go ahead.
I got you. When you coin America's a place, paradise. America's mm-hmm. paradise, you set mm-hmm. the precedent that Americans mm-hmm. on American mm-hmm. soil, so the United mm-hmm. States, mm-hmm. has an ownership over a space, a people, and a culture. And so if you are unaware of our colonial mistreatment that continues to this day, then you come down here with this entitlement and you use it to navigate the spaces of the local people or to create your own spaces and keep the local people out. Mm-hmm. So there's always sometimes, right, the energy of people that move down here is that this place is too beautiful for local people. So you'll always hear the things of the locals don't take care of this. And look at all of these dilapidated buildings and look at this and look at that. But there's no regard for the fact that because we are a colonial possession, we don't necessarily have the latitude that states have to be able to make certain decisions or to have mm-hmm. certain funding or to our government here is quite convoluted. And so people come here and they're all like, people will come to me and be like, oh, you know, you always run around with the government on social media. Why don't you run for office? Right. And my thing is that is a big ask for someone to do who is young and also wants to have a family and create a career. Right? Mm-hmm. That's a huge ask, but somebody have to do it. Mm-hmm. But when you look at the way that our government operates, it's quite convoluted and it does not set us up for success. So when you're talking about us making laws against certain things, we have an undercurrent of bureaucracy here that often goes unacknowledged. And because we are in a colonial regime, a lot of the people here move in a space of unhappy silence. People don't want to kick up because if you kick up, you're punished. We live in a retribution-based community.
Very so coming small, on I here. I can see yes. you. I could push my finger yes. on you so I could see you. Yeah.
If I don't like you and I don't like that one thing you said that one time, I will block every opportunity that comes your way that I have the access to blocking, right? Mm-hmm. And we see that every day, right? Mm-hmm. And so there has to be a way in which you as the traveler, right, who also lives in your own bureaucratical government, who should understand quite well about retribution, because y'all live it every day up there too, mm-hmm. should be able to come to a space like this and not overexert your power of being American on the local people and should be able to look at a sugar mill and think to yourself, wow, the energy of this space feels sacred. And in order to uphold the sanctity of this space, I will carry my wedding on a beach like God intended.
Right, right. And that's interesting. A few things that are interesting, but I think that dichotomy again of traveler versus tourist, that's very interesting because they're vastly different. They are vastly different. The definitions are vastly different. The intent are vastly different. The tourist does have that entitlement. The traveler is someone who's just trying to see more, do more, feel more, learn more. It takes me back to the late, great Virgil Abloh, designer, architect. He had a collection called The Tourist versus Purist, where he was essentially having that same conversation of like taking the energy of someone who is really, truly, purely trying to just learn and feel and embrace something versus someone who is totally kind of it's foreign to them, and kind of like he was trying to utilize that within his collection and really show that how that can kind of conflict and kind of, I mean, it can work together as well, right? Because I think it takes one to know the other, and education and whatnot can be used to enhance someone who is a tourist, but there has to be a willingness to learn as well. And that's where I think the disconnect comes, because the tourist does not want to learn. The tourist just wants to say, hey, man, I just want to take my family down to the Caribbean, down to America's paradise, you know, essentially use up the resource for myself and not leave it in a better state than I correct. Found it. And because of that, that's very, very unfortunate, because that's what we see in a lot of ways. And yeah, I agree with you in a lot of things with a lot of that stuff, man, because I also have always been fighting with that. Should I run for government? Because it seems like, you know, if I keep rah-rah-rah-ing and like showing up dirt and so, you know, online or whatever, in these meetings, these town halls or whatnot, you know, your people versus yourself, they're going to say, well, if you get all the answers, then you should run for office. And that's very disingenuous to a certain extent as well. One, because we do the same government that we say that, hey, man, it really ain't about y'all. It's really about the people who put y'all in these positions, and it's about the people who makes these communities and really move us forward. You're saying that, hey, you need to be in that position to make a change. So that's step one. Step two, I do agree with you as well that if we want to see the nature and quality of government change, that yes, younger, hipper, forward thinkers like yourself, and I'm not making it, I'm not saying, I'm not putting it on you, I'm just saying in general, whatever that looks like myself, like anybody who is trying to do their best to move us forward, we do need to have some type of leverage. But I think the difference is it doesn't have to be government. I think in this social media age, where we are allowed to kind of utilize our voice more in different ways, I think the influence is very important. Now, yes, influence is utilized very heavily in getting into government. So it can be a leverageable aspect where, hey, you're doing these things in the private sector. You're doing these things, you know, on your own accord. You built your own following. You have like-minded people with you that are also kind of pushing the same work. And who knows? If it's, you know, God's will and it's something that you want to go in, it will definitely assist you if you decided, hey, maybe I should take a shot at it just to be able to be a positive reinforcement within that framework. But I also think that the influence can go wherever you go. And I don't think it's defined by a suit, a pin that says VI government on it, you know, a certain salary, a certain car, a certain license plate. You get what I'm saying. I don't think any of that is defined by that. I think the work, the influence, the intent, the community building, which we all can build community. Government doesn't build community. Government governs what's already built. I think that's very important for people to understand. The government is not, if we look at history, we can't really put our finger and say governments built community. A lot of the time, the community was built and these, you know, patriarchal and you know, just essentially just obsolete people who have no idea of what's going on are put into position or put themselves in position to be able to govern something that they don't even understand. But because they feel like they're entitled to something there, they then feel like they have a say in how it's ran. So those are very amazing points, man. And thank you for that was amazing, amazing read the fucking room. First episode, first segment.
Gabriel Curran. Setting the bar high.
And then, oh, yeah, yeah. Whoever come after that, including myself, because I do a lot of the podcast, you know, monologue style. So I'm going to have to really bring the fire. So thank you. Thank you for that.
Of course.
Yeah, no, as we continue kind of navigating the space, your brand is evolving. You know, you are as we said, you're becoming more of a personality. What, you know, and not in a disrespectful way. I hope that's not disrespectful.
No, like, okay. I know what you're saying.
Yes,
I actually prefer that than influencer. That's
okay. Yeah. Influencer is it has become a little diluted in the definition.
Yeah.
So yes, a personality of influence, a personality, and I utilize the terminology personality as someone who can navigate different spaces. You know, you have your ethos of what it is that you do. And then people are like, oh, but she can host this and she can like advertise that. And she has, you know, she's a pretty face. So she can like operate within this, but she comes with brains. And so now it's like this multitude of different spaces that you kind of fill. I would like to know, like, what do you see the Gabrielle Carrard brand kind of evolve into for yourself? Just like what are your challenges to yourself and where do you want it to go from here?
I would say my challenge right now is I create content for $0 and 0 cents, and I create a podcast that makes $0 and 0 cents. Mm-hmm. And as much as I love, okay, I started this with the intention of giving back. Mm-hmm. I also need to be able, it's the workload has increased substantially in doing the free things. And as it relates to my brand, I find that I have the hardest time feeling okay about charging for things. Mm. And so it's something that I like, I'm navigating, you know, like there are certain things where I'm just like, I don't want to charge for that. Like, I love that it's a good, you know, venture or whatever. Mm-hmm. But then there are other things where it's just like, it's hard saying no to people who have like a cool idea. But also recognizing that, like, I still have to eat. Like, I still have to, like, make it. And I'm not eating and I'm not making it. And I mm-hmm. just think that I am very understanding and accommodating. And I would like to see my brand continue to uphold the energy that it was started with, which is the giving back. I don't intend on stopping my content. I don't intend on stopping the podcast. But also drawing in opportunities that are going to be paid and this goes back to what I said initially is I love our community, but sometimes our community could be very extractive. Mm-hmm. So everyone who has a good idea or everyone who has a give back initiative, reaches out and it's always like, oh, it's for the people. It's for mm-hmm. the community, you know, mm-hmm. like it's nonprofit. And I love mm-hmm. that. Like, I yeah. love that people are dreaming up, you know, ways to give back. Yeah. And also I spend so much time doing free labor. Okay. Mm-hmm. If I had to be completely honest, that I get to a road block where I feel like I'm burned out. And I think that when we have the people that care, get to a place where they are tired because the energetic exchange is not continuing to cycle, I think that's where we lose people. And so I know you probably didn't expect that we were going to go there, but
I didn't, but I love it. I love it for a yes. few different reasons. So there's only one thing I disagree with you on, respectfully.
Okay, tell me.
You are eating and you are building. Yes, you're not eating initially physically, like it's not coming in. However, part of it is you do have to build something to be able to leverage it. I do believe that you are now at a place going into 2024 or in 2024 and beyond where now you can literally show people, hey, I did all of this for free. Off of my own dime, my own will, this is why now X, Y, and Z is what I need to be able to take certain things to the next level. So I think you did that part, and that's it's the hardest part. It's also the most fulfilling part because at the end of the day, it came from a genuine place. It was just like, hey, man, I'm doing this for me. Now, as you said, when people now want to extract and want to utilize what you started for free of your own will for yourself, that's where it does get tiresome. It does get, you know, burnout does become a thing. I had posted on my social, on my Instagram one time, charge the price. Because at the end of the day, when you start negotiating on the price, it takes away from you, the creative, because now you have to negotiate with the time you're putting into whatever it is, because you're trying to say, I need to do it this much time to match whatever it is that I negotiated, right? You don't get what you deserve, you get what you negotiate. So I always tell people, charge, and that's coming from a place of, hey man, Kem, same thing. From being the guy that, you know, I come from the music space, initially professional musician, classically trained, all that stuff. And, you know, growing up, I grew up Seventh-day Adventist and all of that kind of stuff. And like growing up, like, it was a lot of like, do it for Jesus, right? Hey, we got this concert with like 20 songs. And yeah, do it for Jesus. No, we don't have budget. You know, God gave you that gift. You know, and all these little isms that people like to kind of use as psychology, and it really mind fucks you in a lot of ways, because it's like, I mean, I guess God, yeah, he did give me the gift.
Being ungrateful?
Yeah, am I being selfish? Darn it. You know, and now you're fighting yourself. But no, you know, whatever you believe in, for those listening, whatever, the good book says your gift will make room for you. With that being said, you know, there are going to be trials and tribulation. That doesn't come with, like, it's not smooth and not easy. Being a creative is not easy. You know, and not just being a creative, but being a professional creative. Because I think we all are creatives. I think we all have that something within us that we can create. Because I think that's what makes us human beings. We have that mm-hmm. thing where we can think of an idea and we can work towards it and it can become a thing. You know, that demigod type of thing, and that... you know, gods on earth and all those kind of stuff. And it's very powerful, but a lot of people don't tap into that. With that being said, you're doing the work, which is beautiful. It's going places. You know, to make it relevant, the reason you got Hot Ones is literally because you dominated the space, right? It's like, okay, we have Julius Jackson. We need somebody to compliment Julius Jackson, a woman, somebody who is influential, somebody who is personable. You can't select from something that you can't see. So imagine if you didn't start any of this, you didn't do any. You literally, as your what was your the lady that works with your name again, the manager?
Je t'aime.
As Je t'aime told you, hey, if you're gonna do it. You took that, you internalized it, and you did it. You look at your content, you look at your portfolio. It's built up. So people were looking at it. Just kept seeing Gabriel Carrard. Well, shit, let's use Gabriel Carrard. And that's because you dominated the space. And there's only one way to be selected. There's only one way to be on people's minds, and it's by doing the work. So this is a long-winded answer to your what you said. But yes, you deserve every goddamn dollar and cent that you ask for. And I hope from moving forward that you look people in the eye straight up and say, hey, I am worth this. This is what I want. And there's going to be a lot of no's. And that's fine. Because it only takes one real good yes. And then you can kind of like keep it moving from there. And then, yeah, at that point, like, the opportunities are for you. And the people that really respect what you do, they're going to be there for you. They're going to understand. They're not going to question you. It's not going to feel like a hassle. You know, and as you continue to build your team, people that you put around you that are going to aid in protecting the essence and the brand of what it is that you're building, that also will manifest itself in helping you to be able to get seen for other opportunities, even outside of your community. But we know, coming from small communities, and it's not a Virgin Islands thing, this is just any community. You come from a small community, people feel like they know you. I know, I changed Gabby Pampas when she was, I went to school with Gabby. Gabby can't charge me for this. I know Gabby. You know, that kind of too familiar thing, that's something we suffer with, right? Until somebody from outside your community comes and puts you on TV or does this, and now you're partnering with this, and now the same people that feel too familiar is like, oh, I know Gabby. Yeah, no, I know her. I used to play pencil fight with her. Like, because they want to feel connected to the same thing that they took for granted. Yeah, that was deep. They want to feel connected to the same thing they took for granted. I'm going to have to clip this. So with that being said, the opportunities are going to find you. You're going to find the opportunities. And that feeling of like having to fight is going to, I don't think it'll die, but like you'll know what's worth fighting for. And you'll know what's like really integral to your brand and what aligns with you, and you're going to keep going from there.
Thank you. I appreciate Absolutely. That, friend.
Absolutely, friend.
From your
Absolutely.
Lips to God's ears.
Right off of Gabby's informing, inspiring, and interacting. Absolutely. Before we get out of here today, I want to bring the second segment. You are a spiritual woman for many different reasons, so I'm going to give you a couple opportunities after the segment to also plug your podcast and whatever you want to plug for the people to find you. Raise Your Vibration. That is the name of the second segment, where I give you the floor to just recommend something to our listeners, to our the people who are watching our community. Hey, something that they can take from this that can help them raise their vibration, elevate their energy. It can be anything in the world that you think that will be of help. The floor is yours. Raise your vibration.
My number one, right, tip to everyone is there is not a person alive today that is not in need of therapy. Go to therapy, okay? Go to therapy. Do the hard work. Take accountability. We all have had things that have happened to us. And we are also, in some instances, we're carrying the blade. And in other instances, we're carrying the handle. And so we have created our own suffering in some instances. We have created the suffering of others. And the quicker we could get to a place where we do the personal work of identifying, how do I not show up in my highest and greatest good? How am I a reflection of some of the negative characteristics that also frustrate me that other people project onto me? And how can I move upward every day? How I could be better, how I could understand. And in order to do that, you have to get to the place of identifying where did the origination point of some of these toxic behaviors and loops, like these mental loops that we just be in. I'm not good enough. I'm not going to make it. I'm a failure. You know, I shouldn't leave this job. That's a dead end job because, you know, what if we don't have enough? And the lack mindset, go to therapy, figure out the origination points, go heal your inner child, and then show back up in the world with all that you've learned and pass it on to other people. Go to therapy.
Go to therapy. It will raise Please. Your vibrations, people. Please. Please. That was for me, too. So I just started, like, I really just started doing
oh,
that.
Oh, congratulations.
And thank you. And also, I guess it's a good time to drop it. There is a project that I'm working on that's literally called Protect Your Inner Child. We will talk more about it off camera. But
okay.
You just crazily aligned that, and I'm going to definitely, you know, with your permission, clip that, because that was perfect. And that ending that you said, heal your inner child, that's my challenge to myself, and I don't want to get emotional on all of that right here, but it's very important. And I've been learning, like, a lot of my issues stem from, like, shit that I think most of our issues stem from shit from our childhood, because that's when we're the most pliable, that's when we're the most absorbing. So a lot of that stuff that we internalize starts from there. And this is a whole other podcast, so I'm not going to go too deep into it because we were literally closing. However, I am learning that. I am learning that you really do have to go and do the work. It's very important to do the work. Set the boundaries for yourself. Go and find the help that you need. Don't like delve into these like short term, you know, things that are going, you feel like make you feel good for the moment, and then just continue diving back into that trauma. Dive into the trauma one good time or two good times, three good times, but make sure that when you come out of it, it's better. You have understanding, and it's, and you can kind of essentially control and move beyond your triggers. So that's very important. So thank you for that. Go to therapy, guys. Gotcha. It will raise your vibration. Gabby,
yes.
Thank you for coming on the Flying Intellectual Podcast. I'll give you the next 30 seconds to plug whatever. Tell them where to find your podcast, where to find you, whatever you want. The floor is yours.
Okay. So I have a TikTok. It's G Carrard. So handle at G Carrard, QUERRARD. My Instagram is Gabrielle Carrard. My Facebook is Gabrielle Carrard. And my podcast name is Caribbean Mystics Podcast. And you can find it on all podcast streaming platforms.
There you go. There you go. Gabby, thank you for coming on the platform. You informed, inspired, and interacted, as I always knew that that's literally what you were going to do. I'm going to rewatch this for myself before I even drop it, because that, it was really, really some deep stuff. And thank you so much. I'm looking forward to continue working with you, coexisting within the space with you, and seeing how we can continue aiding to make sure that your brand continues to take off, and you get exactly what you deserve and beyond for the work that you're
doing.
Thank
you.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much. It was such an honor to be here, and thank you to everyone that listened in. And when you're ready to have that that podcast episode about the inner child, I got you.
Perfect. Because it's definitely coming. I did like one episode last year. That was like 2 years ago. Because I was gonna drop the project then. But then I said I needed to do actual more work on myself. So I paused it, shelved it for a while, and 2 years later, we're about to do some amazing things. So thank you for that. I'll hold you to that.
Of course.
My friend.
Of course.
Take care. Have a good one.
Bye.
Bye. Hey, intellectuals. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Flying Intellectual Podcast. If you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe, leave a review, and tell a friend to tell a friend. Also, join our email list at www.flyyoungintellectual.com, where you can also hire our brand development and management services and book a consultation. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Fly Young Intellectual, where we inform, inspire, and interact. We'll see you soon. Thanks.